Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soul Seekers podcast, where we believe that hunting has the power to transform lives through primal adventure as we share our mission of mentorship is conservation. To learn more about everything we do, check out our show on Carbon TV or go to soulseekersnation.com. Freedom on, everybody, and stay soulful. Do you love America? Do you love supporting American manufacturing? If the answer is yes, then check out Coltac gear for Made in America products with a lifetime warranty. Coltac manufactures specialty gear designed for long-range shooting, hunting, and other tactical applications. From their support bags, suppressor covers, their new bino harness, and a whole lot more, Coltac is creating tough, durable, and innovative gear for serious shooters. Go to Coltac.com to see all that they have to offer and use the code SOULSEEKERS10 to save 10% at checkout. If you are wanting to become more accurate and deadly with your shooting, one of the best things you can do is upgrade your trigger with a Timney. Timney triggers are 100% made in America and have been since their founding, providing a crisp, reliable, and repeatable trigger break every time. I'll be shooting Timney triggers in my guns this year, and I hope you'll join me in shooting the world's finest trigger. Go to timneytriggers.com to get yours today. If you're looking to take your hunting to another level, there's no better way to do it than by subscribing to Onyx Hunt. If you want to get better at hunting and go deeper into your scouting, Onyx is the number one GPS app for that. Join the millions of hunters who trust Onyx Hunt to find more game, discover new access, and hunt smarter. If you want to know more about Onyx, go to onyxmaps.com/hunt or download their app today for a free trial. As a school teacher of 20 years, safety has always been a top priority. So when it comes to shooting and hunting, it's no different for me, which is why I always prefer to shoot suppressed. Huxworks Safety Company is a human exposure workshop dedicated to building products that are optimized for the safety and health of their customers without compromising efficiency or performance. If you're not shooting suppressed, what are you waiting for? Go to huxworks.com to start protecting your health and future today. That's huxworx.com. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Soul Seekers podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack, joined live by the fighter himself, Mr. Chad Mendez, here at Huxworks Safety Company booth, live at the Western Hunt Expo in Salt Lake City. And we are going to be diving into origin stories of hunting, Chad's journey from hunting the mountains and hunting humans in the cage and everything in between. Chad, brother, thanks for joining me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on.
It was awesome running into you in Vegas at SHOT Show. And, like, dude, I don't believe in coincidences. And what a lot of people have a hard time with that when it comes to mindset, you know, oh, it's just kind of the way things are. It's like, no, I believe in purpose, intentionality, and that everything is what is planned the way it's meant to be.
I agree, dude. Everything happens for a reason. I feel like there's a big plan that we're all part of. I think that was cool. We sat and chatted for like over an hour, I think.
Yeah.
Just like walking past each other. I don't even know what time it was. Midnight?
It was late.
Yeah.
Both of us should have been in bed.
Yes, absolutely.
I love it, brother. Well, you're here at the Hunt Expo. You just got done giving a seminar. What did you talk about?
So Loophole just came out with their new BX6 rangefinder. I don't know if you guys saw the binos.
Oh, I saw them. Oh.
Those things are sexy. They got the Ford off. They got precision cut archery built into them, which I'm super excited about that part. They got the pinning feature. So yeah. I use Onyx. So you can drop a pin and it pops up on your Onyx maps. And it's I think, next level game changer. So just kind of talked about those. Talked about the RX 5000, the pinning rangefinder they have too. So
yep.
I got another one. I'm going to jump over to the Peak booth after this, shake some babies, kiss some hands, and then jump over and do another seminar. So
a lot of people might not know this about you, which I didn't until you and I were talking in Vegas. But I always wonder, how does Chad have his own meals? You actually have your own cookbook.
Yeah, I got my own cookbook.
When did you come out with that?
Oh, man. Me and a buddy of mine, Chad Belding, we sat down and did that. I don't know, what was that, 4 years ago now, I think we launched. It's crazy, time has flown by, but launched that, and the provider is the name of it. Mostly all wild game recipes. We have a lot of our friends in the outdoor industry that have some cool recipes that we kind of grab from them as well and mixed in throughout it. But yeah, man, the Peak stuff is awesome. I've worked with those guys from, I think it was their first year in business, like when they launched the company.
And yeah,
it's kind of a cool story. I'd drawn a really cool hunt in California. It was a backcountry type hunt, and I was looking for some meals. And, you know, obviously the Mountain House stuff I had tried before, and just things were not right in
the
bathroom.
It destroys your guts. Yeah. Yes.
For like a week after the hunt, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I'm like telling my buddy Nate, I'm like, yeah, there's got to be something else. He's like, oh, I did just hear about this new company, Peak Refuel. They're supposed to be cleaner, higher protein. He's like, check them out. So I jumped on the website, and I ended up just buying, like, you know, a bunch of their meals. And Seth and Bart at the time, it was so new that they would sit there and just see each order come in, you know? And they saw my name come through, and Seth's a huge UFC fan. And he's like, dude, Mendez just bought a bunch of our meals. So he, like, hand wrote a letter and put it in the order. And when I got it, I read it, and I was like, dude, this is super cool. So I reached out to Seth, and he's like, man, I would love to try to partner with you. And he's like, I know you're a big outdoorsman. You do a lot of cooking, wild game cooking. He's like, I'd like to maybe do some Peak meals with your recipes. And I'm like, dude, that'd be awesome.
Hell what yeah. an honor. That's yeah. so cool.
And so we ended up dropping those the two meals that first year, the elk ragu and the bison ranch mashers. And
yeah, I love the ranch mashers. So that was.
I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about this yet, but well, I won't talk about it because I don't know if we are supposed to. But we got some big news and some cool stuff coming up later in this year with some of my old meals. So we'll just leave it at that.
Well, that's awesome. I will say that Seth, so this is the Soul Seekers podcast. It used to be the Soulful Hunter.
Okay.
And Seth was on the podcast in under 50 episodes. Oh, so like no when way. I first started yeah. and I'm at over 360 now.
Nice.
So Seth is an awesome dude. Great company. Really love what he's did. I will say, and this can happen to any company, but they had a burned batch one time.
Oh, no.
And, guys, but Peak Refuel holds up to what they yeah. stand behind their product. And it was in the backcountry, and I was so hungry, and I got into it, and I was like, oh, my gosh.
Was that early in the
yeah, that was,
early stages?
Yeah, yeah like
we worked some makeups like out
5 years ago or yeah, whatever. Uh-huh. So that was wild. Well, brother, what's your origin story of hunting? Like, were you raised by a father or grandpa or it was, you know, it's yeah. typically a male figure mm-hmm. that speaks life into somebody?
He was my dad. Yeah. So you know, I grew up with, you know, brothers and sisters. I don't know why, but I was always so ate up with hunting, like fishing, hunting, since I was 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. You know, there's pictures of me when I would visit my grandma and aunt and uncles. They were all big outdoorsmen, loved fishing, loved my aunt and uncle were big in the pheasant and quail, all the upland stuff. And you know, there's pictures of me standing on the bank catching trout and stuff as a 3-year-old, you know. And it was always something I'd loved, and my dad got me into the big game stuff, and I used to follow him through the woods when I was a little kid. You know, we grew up hunting Central California up in the Sierras up in there, chasing blacktail, mule deer, crosses, bear, like all that stuff. And, you know, I was just obsessed with it. I remember, like, mowing lawns. I used to go around my neighborhood just mowing lawns so that I could raise enough money to – I remember I bought my very first real bow. My dad, obviously, as a kid, I had all the, like, makeshift homemade type stuff that I'd shoot cans with in the backyard for hours and stuff. And – but my first bow I bought off a classmate of mine, a good friend of mine. It was an old PSE Nova.
Uh-huh.
And I was 11 years old. I got my hunter safety that year. And when I turned 12, I killed my first deer, and it was with that bow.
Really?
That I mowed all those lawns for. And, yep, it was a pretty cool story. And
blacktail or mule deer?
Blacktail. It was a little, you know, fork spike, tiny little thing.
Yeah, your typical blacktail. Yeah. You know, like.
Uh-huh. But, you know, it was a cool experience. I shot it. We tracked that thing downhill for a few hundred yards and caught up to it, and it was bedded, jumped up, and actually saw the thing tip over. And I remember just feeling so many different emotions inside. Like, you know, I'd never seen a deer die and watched it, you know, take its last breath. And it was very emotional for me as a 12-year-old. But I was also extremely excited because it's something I dreamt about doing and practiced for and visualized since I was a little kid. I don't know why, but it was something I like just really wanted to do, and just watched it happen. So I was excited, but also felt really bad that I had just taken its life. So there was like so many different emotions. We ended up getting split up from my dad. Me and my brothers were dragging it. It got dark. He got lost in the woods. We got lost dragging this dead deer. And we ended up pulling into somebody's camp on accident and like dragging this thing in. And there was a husband and wife sitting on the campfire. And I remember we come dragging this thing in, and the wife looks over, and her face just turns white. And
oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, you know, we're not supposed to be there. But they ended up giving us a ride back to camp, and my dad ended up finding the truck, and it all worked out. But, yeah, it was an experience for sure.
First off, it's extremely impressive for me to hear that you said you bought your first bow. Like, you were raised in the outdoors concept, hunting, fishing, all this. But for you to be like, I'm mowing lawns and I'm buying a bow. I was mowing lawns and I bought a bicycle.
Nice.
Like, I was like, I just want to have something to ride around the neighborhood.
Uh-huh. I love it.
But that is so cool. So on that hunt, were you hunting from the ground? Were you with your dad? Or did he say, all right, son, I'll be over here type thing, go out on your own?
No, we were actually driving in to go to a spot to park and, like, hike in glass. And these two bucks ran across the road in front of us. And, you know, my dad pulls over, and they go up into the woods. So we get out and start making our way in. And I ended up getting, like, 15 yards from this thing, you know, and got an arrow in it, and the rest is history. But
so cool.
Yeah. At first, my dad, because, you know, in California, it's got to be a fork at least on one side.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you know how many spikes we run across, and it's like, dang it, okay, I can't send it. And so I could see the fork on the side that I was on, and my dad couldn't. He's like, don't shoot. I don't know. I think it's a spike. And I'm like, no, dad. It's like, we're sitting there whispering back and forth for, like, felt like minutes, you know?
Yeah.
And then finally, he's like, I don't know. And I'm like, I'm shooting it. I can see the fork. And so I sent it, you know, and thankfully it was a fork. But, yeah, man, so many good memories from that hunt. My brothers were there with us, too. So,
yeah. Dude, that's awesome. So that really, like, kicked it off for you,
yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah.
And then at that point, were you like, dude, I have to do this more? I have, or you know, you're also only 12 years old, yeah. So it's not like...
It was more up to my dad than me at that point. But, yeah, I would have... I mean, if it was up to me, I would have skipped school and just been hunting daily, you know? But my dad did a great job of... You know, he owned a cabinet business. We'd go to school, mix in all of our wrestling and training stuff in there. And then on weekends, we would try to do camping trips or run up and do a day of fishing or, you know, go ride quads or whatever it may be. So he did a good job of balancing all the other stuff, but then making sure we still had that bit of outdoor lifestyle thrown in there as much as possible. So, you know, obviously wrestling at that point was still, I started at 5 years old and was, you know,
wow.
I did it every single year all the way up through college. So it was school and wrestling were first, you know, and then everything fell into place after that. So, but yeah, after college, I really had to kind of cut back on how much I was hunting through college, trying to keep up with school and then competing with wrestling. But, and once I graduated and jumped into the fight game, I had a lot more time. I moved up to Sacramento, Northern California, which now introduced turkeys because we didn't have turkeys down where I was.
Okay, yeah.
Turkeys, waterfowl was really good. I started leasing some really good properties with big blacktail on them, so I was chasing blacktail. I'd go train and keep all my hunting stuff in the truck, and then I'd shower at the gym real quick, go out, throw all my camo on, and haul butt straight out to the spots where I'd be hunting and do like an evening hunt, you know? So obviously I had more time at that point in my life, and then once I retired from the fight game, the floodgates opened, man. I tried to figure out a way that I could make money doing things in the outdoor world, which, you know, that's what I absolutely love. That's my true passion. It has been since I was a kid. And so we created Fins and Feathers, which is like we call it a celebrity outdoor service, where we take clients on different hunting and fishing adventures all over the world, but we add different UFC athletes or pro ball players, actors, PBR guys, whatever it may be, on these trips with a lot of country singers to go. And
yeah.
So it's kind of a unique experience where they get to go do these really cool hunts, but now they're doing alongside somebody they might watch on TV sing country songs or fight in the UFC. And,
right.
You know, and you and I know the camaraderie in a hunt camp is unlike yes. anything anywhere yes. else. Like, you can't, you go to a meet and greet, you shake somebody's hand, you take a picture, maybe a little bit of small chat, and then that's it, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
You get to share a campfire with somebody, you know, the experiences of hunting, the ups and downs, you know, the storytelling.
100%.
It's completely different. You don't get that anywhere else. So we're like, how do we harness this and create this into some type of business that nobody else is doing yet? I get to travel all over and hunt for free and make some money doing it. And so me and a buddy of mine kind of wheelhouse this, and we had no idea how it was going to do. First year, We launched it right at the end of 2015. So 16 was going to be our first full year. And within like a month, everything was sold out for that year.
Incredible.
And I was like, dude, that's pretty cool. Like, and we didn't have a ton of, I think we had like 4 or 5 hunts at that point, or fishing trips too. But each year we kind of grew it. And we, at one point, shoot, we were doing probably 30 trips a year. And that was the peak of Fins and Feathers. And then, man, I started realizing, having a family, and this was like a hobby, love, passion job for me. It yep. wasn't, and it started taking up too much of my time. So I cut back. We got a good balance, I think, now where we keep it like 5 to 7 trips throughout the season. I get to hunt with really cool people. You know, my buddies that are the athletes get to come out, and I get to help them harvest their game and fill their freezers.
Yeah.
Everyone has a good time. And yeah, I feel like I cheated the system somehow, but I love it.
I mean, you're doing it right. It's awesome. So when it comes to you being a parent now, you were raised with such influence from your father.
Yeah.
What's it like being a father of your own and loving hunting, but then also knowing that you need to make sure that you're passing it on to your kids? Yeah. How old are your kids?
My oldest, I have 2 daughters. My oldest is 6 and the youngest is 4. But man, they do it with me, which is great. They have been hunting with me. My oldest, shoot, she's been with me and killed probably 8 to 10 turkeys with me from 2 years old up till now. She's done a bunch of waterfowl hunts with me. She's been there when I've killed blacktail. I killed my biggest bull elk last year in Washington with my wife and my 2 daughters there with me, which was absolutely amazing. I killed a big mule deer with them last year in Utah. And man, it's just, to me, that part of it means so much that I'm just trying to introduce that as much as I possibly can to them. Whether they end up hating it or loving it, I'm just trying my hardest to let them understand, like, why do we do this? We live off of it. We fill our freezer first and foremost. We enjoy the outdoors. We understand that hunting is conservation. Like, my oldest just finished her hunter safety course.
Awesome.
So we did about a month and a half. Every day after school, we'd go in for, you know, 20 minutes and just follow the course until, I don't know, probably a week ago, she finished it and she officially has her hunter safety.
Big deal.
So, she's super excited about that. She can't hunt quite yet, but we can at least start putting points in for her.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know? But,
oh, yeah.
But yeah, I think it's, for me, it's very important for them to understand, especially because this is such a big part of my life, has been since I was a kid, but also now as an adult, and where our money as a family comes from, and, you know, our food and our meat, where it comes from. And I think my oldest for sure understands it. The youngest is just now starting to get into it and kind of realize what we're doing. But man, I'm also setting a high standard for those boyfriends when they get into high school, because if that boy can't call elk or ducks, my daughter is for sure going to school him, because my oldest already can duck call and throw elk calls out, which is freaking awesome to me. She's walking around our house and I just hear like bulls screaming and cow calls, and she's got a duck call and she's just walking around practicing, and it's pretty stinking cool, man. I love it.
That's awesome. This year, I have 3 boys, 11, 9, and 6, and I got to take each boy individually out hunting this year. And moving to Texas is a lot easier than, you know, it's hard to take kids into the mountains at young ages on public land and all this because of the difficulty, right? Like, we're already as grown adults being like, hey, how do I make sure I'm ready for the mountains?
Yep.
Let alone are you having to make sure your little kiddo's ready for the mountains. So we're hunting whitetails out on the lease, and my 6-year-old, He's not ready to kill an animal yet, but he's ready to go with me. Yep. And I take him to the gun range and I'll hold the gun and, you know, he'll squeeze the trigger, but I'm making sure it's on target.
Nice.
Well, I took him hunting and I was like, all right, we're hunting does or spikes. This is what we're doing. And he's like, oh yeah, Dad, like, can't wait. And literally, we're only there for 45 minutes.
And a giant walks out.
A giant spike walks out.
world record.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, when he... So I shot it. I'm like, oh, there's a deer. He's like, oh, yeah, Dad. I shoot this buck, And you see this picture.
Oh, nice.
Like,
look,
he's just
smile.
Overjoyed. So and he cool. claims that deer as his own. That's awesome. And it, like, that'll be a moment he remembers forever.
Absolutely.
And it's so I always talk about on this podcast how perspectives are always going to be opinions. You know, I'm advocating and spreading the gospel of hunting. So we need to make sure that, you know, whether an anti-hunter or a non-hunter, we need to make sure that, you know, you can't really speak to it because you've never done it. Just like I've never fought in an octagon, yeah. I have no idea really what it takes to get to that level. So other than that, I'm just being a talking head for other people.
Yeah.
So I don't, if my kids grow up and they're not hunters, that's fine. But what I need to make sure I instill in them is that they respect hunting and then they can advocate it through like the voting process. Yep. And you know, you got these ballot box initiatives that are mm-hmm. always attacking hunting. We got to make sure that we're defending it.
Yep.
And just providing good opportunities.
Absolutely. Yep. I agree, man. I think it's crazy how many of this next generation have no idea what hunting or fishing is. And we're kind of losing, we know we're losing that, right? Like the numbers are way down, but I think it's extremely important. And I'm in the same boat with you. Like, I don't care if my girls don't want to do it when they get older, but I want them to understand it. Just like you, I want them to respect it and have a positive outlook on it because it is a positive thing. Okay. Whether, you know, you're into hunting or not, it is a positive thing. And they need to know that. So I agree, man. I think that's awesome.
Oh, dude, I appreciate that. So let's talk about fighting real quick and mindset because – you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm a mountain warrior. I got to make sure my head's right for a hunt. And hunting in the mountains is a head game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, keeping your head in it, especially when you're not seeing animals, like, that is the absolute worst.
It's tough.
I'm also, I played college football and lacrosse. So I have a little bit of that higher level athlete mentality of, like, I know what it takes to get to the next level.
Yeah.
How did what you did with athletics help you with your head game to then pursue and achieve in the hunting realm?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of similarities that transfer over from wrestling, fighting, training into the hunting world. I mean, I think a couple of the biggest things are the dedication and your determination. I mean, you know, like stepping into a fight, if I'm not dedicated enough to put in the right amount of work and the correct work to beat this guy, I'm gonna get my face smashed in, you know? And it's the same thing with a hunt. I can't half-ass just pick a spot and just say, I say this, but there still are guys that get lucky and do that. But for the most part, you know, you can't just blindly go in there not training, you know, especially if it's a like a wilderness hunt where it's tough terrain. Like,
yeah.
Let's be honest, you probably have a day or two max, and if you're not in shape and ready for it, you're not gonna be able to finish this thing. So I think the dedication of doing the right things that it's going to take to be successful in both the fight world, wrestling world, and on a hunt, I think is very similar. And then determination. I mean, you in a fight, I might have done everything possible to prepare for this opponent, but the opponent is just having a great night. You know, my second fight with Jose Aldo, like it was a five round war. Like, that was the hardest fight I've ever had in my life. And it's like halfway through, you're like, I still got two more rounds of this. Like, yeah. You know, like, how am I going to do this? I am spent. But you just have that grit. You have that determination. You're like, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep pushing this pace. I have no choice. It is life or death.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I went out there. I did it. But it's the same thing on a mountain. I've been on, you know, I've hunted with Eric Chesser. Here's an example. We did a backcountry public land hunt in New Mexico. And it was a hunt that Eric had, you know, had four or five successful years in a row on really good bulls. And for whatever reason, that year it was just an off year. And there was, I think, three or four of us hunting. We packed in on horses, you know, had our base camp. And, it, you know, every day's big pushes, big climbs, a lot of effort you're putting into it. And we just were not seeing anything,
yes,
you know.
Those are the worst.
Oh, dude, and it's, you're getting hit with storms. You're having to stop and, you know, wait storms out for an hour or two under a tree while it's just a complete whiteout, mm-hmm. you know, and then some dumping rain, and it's just uncomfortable. It's not fun. You're not seeing anything, but you're like, man, do I just leave right now? Like, do I just chalk it up, or do I keep going, you know? And for me, it's, I pushed through. We still didn't end up killing anything, but we did find a bull that was pushing 400.
Whoa.
Yeah, big, big bull. And, you know, Eric ended up switching gears and tried to kill that thing for the next, like, 4 or 5 days of that hunt. Again, we didn't get it done, but I think for us, the win was just locating that thing and having that target bull to chase because, man, we were getting our butts kicked.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things. It's like you could just give up, you know, 3-4 days into that and just be like, eh, screw this, man. I'm out. But none of us did, you know, and you stick it out and you hunt. I ended up having to leave a day early because I had to get back to my wife and kids for there was an event or something that we had going on. But those guys stuck it out that extra day and still nobody killed, unfortunately. But, you know, it's one of those hunts where it's uncomfortable. It's miserable. You know, you're like, screw this. What am I doing? You know, it's hard work. But
and in the moment, the suck, like, is the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were not there and you were at home, you'd be daydreaming about, like,
absolutely.
Dude, I wish I was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the whole time, like, even my drive home, I'm like, what could we have done different? Were we not checking the right spots? Like, should we have pushed even further? And, I mean, we were doing big mile pushes, and it's, like, steep, nasty terrain. I'm just like, man, I don't know what else we physically could have done, but we just were zigging, and they were zagging, and we just weren't getting eyes on them, so... it is what it is. It's one of those hunts, but I think that ability to keep pushing and having that grit and determination on those hunts, I mean, I think I get that from the training, the fighting, and being in those really sucky moments in a cage where you're just like, I gotta quit. Like, there's no way. I can't keep doing this, but you keep doing it. And then after the fact, you're like, man, I felt that moment of, like, I can't do anymore, and I was able to do it. So that tells you something, you know?
You know, it's really interesting, and I'm going to bring up nutrition in regards to this because I believe that a lot of Americans, well, they're overweight and out of shape. When it comes to that decision, that defining apex moment of do I quit or do I just keep enduring because I'm already here, I might as well go in, goes in with, like, the mindset of nutrition. Do I reach for that extra, you know, sugary snack, or do I actually just hold myself accountable and ride this ride out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, are you tracking me on what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Because that's the mindset. It's like, I'm already here. Why not just keep going?
Yeah, that's the dedication part of it. It's like, if I know I'm going to be dieting and training for a fight or a wrestling match, I have to make a certain weight. Or if it's a hunt and I'm trying to get in shape, I got to lose X amount of pounds. But you're along the way going, oh, I'm still just going to eat this. Like, it'll be fine. That you don't have the dedication. You're not having the determination to stick to that plan. And that's where you're going to fail in the long run. So it's like, I think pushing through that point of I'm not going to break what I already told myself I was going to do. When you can start doing that and you make that a habit and it's consistent, it becomes so easy to where it's like you don't even second guess it anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
What type of mental talk do you have? Do you speak out loud to yourself?
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it depends what the situation is, but I mean, there's been times where I'm cussing myself out or I'm motivating myself and trying to push myself. But I mean, both in the training fighting world and in hunting, I mean, there's been hunts that I'm, you know, you make a crappy shot or you completely blow something that you've worked so hard, like you put a huge stock in and you're like inside bow range and you do something completely stupid and blow it, shoot over its back or whatever. I've done that and I'm just sitting there talking to myself like, what the hell are you thinking, you know? But, you know, there's other times where I'm like feeling that thought of, dude, I don't think I can do this. Like on my doll sheep hunt 4 years ago, there was multiple times where I'm just like, you know, I was successful in the sheep hunt. We're still like 20 miles to get out. You know, we got probably 60, 70 pounds on my back. My legs were already 6 days into it. I don't even know how many miles we've put in and you're just toast. And there's times where you're just like, how am I going to get out of here? Like, I don't know how I'm going to finish this, but it's like, it goes back to that fight mentality of now it's life or death. Like, I put myself in that position sometimes. It's like, all right, what am I going to do? Just quit? That means I die right here? Like, that's not going to happen. Let's go. So
I always find myself having this conversation of like, how hard is actually hard?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, so many times I teach public school, right? Dude, just read the directions and do the assignment. But it's too hard. I'm like, dude, you don't know what hard is. Like, go do something actually hard. And that's where I started getting into like ultra running, right? So in 2017, I killed my very first big game animal, 9 miles in the backcountry state of Washington, black bear. And I packed out. I didn't bone out because this is my very first animal. I didn't understand the whole idea like boning out. And I brought the cape with me. And I used to sort of work at REI and sell backpacks and all this. So I had my hiking backpack and I put all that meat and that hide and it just fell straight to the bottom of my bag.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's resting right on my bum. Oh. And I packed out that entire thing 9 miles solo out to the car to put it on ice because I was going to go back in. I brought some buddies and they were still hunting. I've ran marathons. I've ran ultra marathons. Packing out that animal 9 miles was, for me, to this day, the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah, that's next level, dude. Especially, I don't know how big the bear was. That's a lot of weight on your back.
I mean, it wasn't any, like, monster bear, but still, like, and the way it was sitting made it more difficult.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
But the point is, like, I'm here. Here I am on a trail, no radio communication, no cell service. No, it's me, and I either have to get out or
you
I'm...
die.
Or I'm waiting on this trail until someone comes and finds me.
Yeah.
And so I ended up stepping on a rock, rolling my ankle, taking the weight of the pack, took me all the way to the ground, and I was laying there, and I screamed out loud, like in the woods. You know, if you scream in the woods and no one's around to hear you, does it make sound? I was like, oh, yeah, it does. So I'm laying there, and I'm just like, ah! And I said, get up.
Yeah.
Get up. No one's coming to save you.
Mm-hmm.
No one's coming to save you. And if you want to do it, it's really up to yourself.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of people in this world that have never been put in that position or pushed themselves to that point where they feel like that is their max. Like, I can't go anymore. But it's crazy what the human body will do, man.
Yeah.
Is like, there is more. There always is more. And it's weird that it is there, but it's there. But most people never get to that point of like hitting that wall. And so it's like you got a guy that's never hit or girl that's never hit that wall. And then you put them in a situation like that and they don't understand that they can keep going. They can push through that. It's hard, but I can do more.
Yeah.
And they give up.
Well, yeah. I tie it back into nutrition is like, how hungry are you, right? We're so used to in America that, you know, I relate it to a gas tank, right? If that needle's not on full, then something's wrong and I need to eat.
Uh-huh.
But you can let that sucker ride, baby, and you're still good. That car's still going to be going.
Yep.
And then until it's not, it's not.
Yeah.
Right? Like there is, you know, like we can't live without food. We can't live without water.
Uh-huh.
But you can sure go a long time and push yourself.
Oh, yeah.
What is, for you, what was the hardest thing you've done?
Ever in my whole life?
Yeah, like if you could pinpoint that.
I mean, that second fight with Aldo was definitely up there. I'd say that first doll sheep hunt I ever did was extremely tough. We did, I think we did over 150 trail miles in a 10-day period. With, you know, no kill. So it was one of those things that's like lots of effort, lots of work. You're back there for 10 plus days away from your family, and then you don't reach that successful feeling, you know? Like it almost feels like you let yourself... For me, it was like an emotional letdown because I had, like, trained so hard. I had visualized. Like, I did everything I possibly could, trained to get there, and I pictured myself finding and shooting a ram, and there just was a huge winter kill off. We saw tons of sheep, just could not find that legal ram. So
yeah.
I think mixing in the physical and the mental part of it, that was definitely one of the hardest things. But you know, those two things are different. The Aldo fight physically hurt. Like, I got back. It was in Brazil. We fought. We were the main event, so we didn't even fight there till like 2 in the morning because they're airing it here in the United States, which is like 10, 11 o'clock at night. So I forget the time difference. But it ended up, by the time we got done fighting, we did press conference and everything. It was like 6 a.m. there when we got back to the hotel. And it was the most pain I've ever felt, like from head to toe. Like, couldn't walk from throwing leg kicks, and my feet and shins were so bruised and in so much pain. My thighs from taking kicks. I peed blood from probably getting kicked or punched in the kidneys or, you know, whatever that night. Everything just hurt from head to toe. And walking into the hotel, the sun's starting to rise. It's just me, my wife, who was my fiance at that time, and my dad, and just like coaches and trainers and stuff. And they're like hobbling me to the bed and like getting my legs put up under pillows and trying to give me ibuprofen. And I hadn't eaten anything for hours, you know. And I think that was probably the most physical and painful experience I've ever been through. But I think the mix of the emotions and the physical push with that sheep hunt was right there with it. Like, yeah. I said, they're just different, you know?
Yeah. Who inspires you? You know, because you are your champion, right? Like, a lot of people look up to you and be like, dude, Chad Mendez, that's, you know, I am not putting you on a pedestal, but the idea of like, I want to emulate what he's done or how he operates. So who does somebody who's competed and been successful at a high level, who do you look for inspiration?
You know, this is probably not the answer you're expecting because you're figuring I'm going to say an athlete, but my dad, man. My dad is the person that I truly look up to. Like, obviously, as a kid and you're going through those teenage years, there's, you know, points where you're just like, why is he parenting me like this? Like, this is stupid, you know? And there's times where you bump heads, but now growing up, being a parent and looking back on everything, my dad did such a great job running his own business that he started right out of high school, raising a really big family of lots of brothers and sisters, you know, making sure that we had all that outdoor lifestyle thrown in there between, I remember my dad used to scoop me up 6, 7, 8 years old, and it, you know, we'd have to drive 4 or 5 hours for a wrestling tournament, and he'd scoop me and my brother up, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning and would put us in the back of our Suburban. He had beds made and we'd sleep the whole drive, and he'd get there and weigh-ins were at 7 a.m. and, you know, we'd go do a full day of wrestling, sometimes 2 days. It was a Saturday and a Sunday, and my dad would be sitting in the stands and down there in my corner coaching for 2 full days after working an entire work week running his own business. And it's a cabinet business, so it's physical, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's lifting heavy stuff and installing cabinets and doing all that stuff, and he'd still be doing that with us. And then if it wasn't a wrestling weekend, we were camping or hunting or fishing.
That's cool.
And so looking back on that, I'm like, dadgummit, man, like, knowing how exhausting parenting is now.
Yes.
Like, how did he do it? You know, and it's something that I truly look up to. Like, I understand that there was a lot of selflessness, and at the time going through high school, I didn't understand that, you know, and there was times where me and him bumped heads, like I said. And but looking back on it now, man, that the dude's, he's unstoppable. He's still running that business. My dad's mid-60s and he's still installing cabinets and still doing.
Wow.
I said, Dad, are you ever gonna retire? And he's like, the day you retire is the day you start dying. And that's what he told me. And I'm like, all right, well, and I think he enjoys it, you know. There's a sense of pride that he gets from it. I mean, my dad's cabinetry, it's all custom stuff, is like some of the best I've ever seen. And he puts a lot of effort and puts his heart and soul into every job. And then he still loves hunting and fishing. So it's funny, like, we've come full circle. I buy him a lot of these private land hunts now where me and him can go share these cool hunts where we grew up hunting the public and grinding out a whole season trying to find one legal buck type thing. And it's like, Dad, let me just take you on like a hunt where we can go, you know.
I always say on the podcast, you can never outgive good.
No.
And so
no.
When you're putting good out into the world, it just naturally boomerangs. And we don't put good out for the return. We put good out because we love humanity.
Yeah.
We love other people. And and all you listeners out there, you're worth it. You are worthy of love. You're worthy of the time invested in you. You're worthy of the successes in your life. And you also got to keep showing up.
Yep.
And you got to keep putting in the work, because that is where the value doesn't go wasted. Yep. Right? So that is so impressive, brother, that is the guy. My father, very strong influence in my life. State of Washington Hall of Fame football coach. I played high school football under him. We fell short of a state championship. Like, I was his quarterback. Big things. But then as life progressed, there's a lot of things that didn't shake out well. And I actually don't have a relationship with my father now. So it sucks. And we can always learn from everyone, whether we like them or we don't like them. You know, whether they operate in love and goodness and kindness, or they operate in hate and spitefulness, and because we choose into the life that we want. Right here at Soul Seekers, we talk about mentorship as conservation. Mentorship is just loving people. And I truly believe in, we get to create the world in our existence that we want. And we're made in the image of God. God's a creator. We're, you know, if he's a creator and we're made in his image, then we get to co-create with him. And so at the end of the day, we are choosing into everything, whether we are subconsciously choosing or we're being like, oh, I want that cheeseburger. Let's go get it. You know what I mean? Like, when you're getting your face pounded in and you're pushed up against the mat and you're like, I could tap out right now. You made a conscious choice to say, no, I'm not quitting on myself. I'm going to keep going. Right. When the storms are rolling in and all the suck is in full effect on a hunt, you could tap out and you could go home and you could go lay in a hotel bed or, you know, talk to the wife or whatever it is. But there's something inside of us that is like, I don't know if it's ego. I don't know if it's like I have to prove myself. It's like, no, I'm not quitting. Do you have moments like that where you can, like, hallmark moment, be like, this is where there was a change in my life of trajectory? Like, I knew how to overcome things a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I matured mentally a lot later in life than I would have liked to, as far as that part of it goes. You know, looking back on my wrestling career all the way up through college and everything, you know, obviously you have parts of that mindset, but you know, now I'm going to be 41 in May, and there's a lot of things now that I look at thinking back to those days where I'm like, why was that's my mindset was in such a weird spot.
Right.
You know, and I, you know, hindsight's 2020, and, you know, there's a lot of things that you would like to change and do differently. But, you know, I think ultimately just being able to push through, like for me, my NCAA tournament, I was undefeated that whole season, my senior year in college, and had visualized and worked my entire life to be an NCAA champion. And it came down to that moment where there was a ref's bad call that really changed that match, and I lost it, you know. And it was one of those things that's up until that point I'm like why did that happen? Why, like, what was a reason for that? But that's what motivated me to jump into the fight game. And honestly, without doing that, I wouldn't be here talking to you right now. Honestly, there's so many things in my life that would have completely gone a different direction. You know, I wouldn't have been able to build a social media platform like I did, most likely, and compete at the highest level in the UFC, make a lot of the connections that I've made that's helped grow a brand outside of that fight world that now allows me to do what I absolutely love to do as a job. And I feel truly blessed because of it. There's a lot of things that I wasn't really a fan of in the UFC, but even with that stuff set aside, like, I owe it all to that. Like, mm-hmm. without being able to do that because of wrestling, jumping into the UFC, and I wouldn't be here right now. So there's a lot of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I think just having that mindset of continuing, like, I could have, after that match, just been like, I'm done. Like, it's been a long career in the athletics world. I'm just going to go get a job as a, you know, PT or, you know, whatever. I was a kinesiology major, and so that was kind of the trajectory I was heading. But there was something in me, because I lost that match, mentally I was like, I'm not done yet.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's probably one of those instances.
Well, I love that you brought up the word visualization. How does that play a role in your life or the things that you want to accomplish?
Oh, that's huge for me. Like, that's something, like, as of right now, you know, obviously the competitive stuff, I'm still doing some wrestling things here and there, but it's not to the level that I was doing in college and in the UFC. But the majority of my visualizing now comes into play when I'm shooting my bow and training for hunts. You know, my favorite thing to do in the preseason is get up early before my girls wake up, right before the sun gets up, have my breakfast, have my coffee, and then I go out on my back patio and I just shoot as first light, and just, it's quiet. You hear the birds chirping and, you know, I have no distractions and I can shoot for an hour or so. And I visualize, like, visualize different scenarios where I've screwed things up in past archery hunts, and I think about what I would have done differently in that moment. And then I put myself in that position with the foam target. You know, I'm trying to, like, recreate that and train myself to where if that happens again, you're not thinking, it's just reaction, and you nail it this time. And so I think the visualization part of it plays a big part in being successful in that heat of the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you've seen in archery hunts, and there's a lot of times where you don't have time to sit and think, and, like, it's just something that happens. And without visualizing, you're kind of lost in that moment, and you're just sending a Hail Mary.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it works, but most of the time it doesn't. And so I think that's where that plays a huge part in my life right now. And then also just, you know, success in business. Like, I have my two daughters, I have a wife, and I want to be a husband and a father that can provide for my family in a sense that we have freedom. Like, if we want to go to our cabin and go fish and hang out and camp for a week, I can do that, you know? Or if all of us want to go up for that Washington elk hunt for a week, we can do that. And so for me, like, being focused, visualizing as far as how do I become successful enough to where I have more time with my family, I do that a lot as well, and try to put those scenarios into play and building out businesses or partnering with businesses that are already successful and figuring out ways that we can grow it more and, you know, benefit everybody. So yeah, there's a lot of visualization that I do at this point in my life, but, and I think the most of it comes with that bow in hand as of now.
Yeah. Do you have any faith-based background?
A little bit. So, you know, grew up a bit with my family going to church and then kind of stepped away. And, you know, the last probably month and a half, 2 months there in Idaho, started going to church again. And really, my daughter goes to a private school called Freedom Academy, which is a very faith-based school, which is really cool. And it's something that's really starting to grow in our family. So yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Awesome. What's the story of maybe overcoming or just crazy adversity or just epic of a hunting story of, you told the blacktail, like, that first story is pretty awesome. But what's something that, like, when you look back on your hunting journey, you're like, that was the hunt. That was the one that I loved the most.
Man, you know, I have a favorite hunt. I think it's one of them. It's tough because I'd say the last two that I've done, three that I've done with my family involved, like, weigh so heavy in my heart now. It's, you know, and if the first one was my oldest daughter, it was her first travel hunt she'd ever done with me. I had a New Mexico antelope tag, and me and her packed our bags and jumped on an airplane, and she flew out, and we stayed in a camper, and you know, ended up killing a really, like, an 80-inch goat. But it was cool because there was the horned toads all over the place, and she's an animal lover, and she's scooping these things up left and right, you know. And also turtles. There was those, I don't know if they're box turtles or what, but they're wild turtles running around, and she's picking up turtles and, yeah, you know, absolutely loving it. And we ended up putting a stock in on the goat that I killed, and part of it, you know, we're trying to close the distance because he's up, down, and the bottom. And I look back, and she's got three horned toads in her hand, one tiny little one and two bigger ones. And she's like, I got a family.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so we get to the point when she, you know, has to let him go, and she's belly crawling with me. And we get out to the edge, and I end up making a great shot on this thing. And she was the first one to the goat, which was friggin' cool, man.
Awesome.
Yeah, we were filming it, and Chief beat us and was just like, wanted to be hands-on, was all about it. And that, to me, that's probably one of my favorite hunts. And then that one last year with that elk, my biggest elk, which I was not expecting to kill my biggest. I was happy shooting a spike or a cow, you know, or whatever, because they were there. It was my youngest's first. That was her second big game hunt. We did a mule deer hunt earlier that season, but I just wanted her to be a part of an elk hunt. My oldest had never seen an elk up close. And we ended up stumbling upon this thing, got it killed, and it was just like, whoa, you know.
So awesome.
So cool. My daughters were there. I got to teach them how to do the skinning and let them use the knife, and we call them cobwebs when you're pulling the skin off the meat and you're, you know, skinning the stuff. And we got the cobwebs, Papa. They call me Papa. And it was just cool for them to be a part of it and see all that. And then obviously because it was a bonus, because it was a nice bull. And yeah, it was definitely up there also.
Awesome. Chad, I've loved spending time with you, brother. I really appreciate it. Thanks for creating some time for me here at the Hunt Expo. And good luck this coming year, brother.
And thank you.
Be blessed with your family. It's really impressive to see the legacy that's getting passed on from your father to you, and now from you to your children.
Absolutely.
In the hunting space, but also in the importance of taking care of your family.
Awesome, man. Thank you for having me. And dude, it's been great chatting from
SHOT
Show to now, dude. That's
I love that's it. Cool. Well, guys, go check out Fins and Feathers.
Yep.
Right? Is it finsandfeathers.com?
Finsandfeathers.com. And Fins is spelt with a Z, and Feathers is spelt with a Z. So finsandfeathers.com.
And then be on the lookout for maybe some new Peak Refuel Chad Mendez mules.
We're doing a throwback. So sometime this summer. Yeah, stay tuned. We'll be teasing it. We're going to do all the funny videos and, you know, all the lead up to it, which I absolutely love doing all that stuff. So, yep.
Awesome. Guys, I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope you are able to take something from this and maybe challenge yourself, reflect on it. Because remember, inward reflection leads to outward correction. And it's up to us to be the change we want to see in the world. If you want hunting to last for generations to come, then you got to invest in the hearts and lives of other people. Be blessed. Thank you for tuning in this episode. If you like to give a thumbs up, like, share, subscribe, share it with other people. For Chad Mendez, Johnny Mack here at Soul Seekers, be blessed, freedom on, and as always, stay soulful.
If you enjoyed today's podcast and want to support the show, you can always like, share, subscribe, and leave a rating, as it helps us share our mission of mentorship is conservation. Thank you so much for tuning in and being a part of Soul Seekers Nation as we transform lives through primal adventure.